Welcome to the Hot Girl Hotline. I'm your host, Madison. Our guest today is sharing his story that is nothing short of extraordinary. An author to a powerful, life-changing book. His book is a mix of memoir and self-help. Despite some truly devastating, heartbreaking experiences in his childhood, settled in corporate America, traveled the world, and he's been a stand-up comic in Hollywood. Welcome, Darnell.
Thank you so much. I'm just so honored to be here.
Yeah, I'd like to get into your story from the very beginning.
Okay.
Like, how did it all start?
I guess you can say I had front row seats to the hard knock life. I was born to two teenage parents. My mom had me, she was 15, my dad was 16. And I think from 2 years old is when I first started to see my father beat my mom. And I had a younger brother and a sister. And at 10 years old, he finally murdered my mother. We moved in with my grandparents, my mother's parents, and they adopted us. And through therapy and a lot of help to eliminate the post-traumatic stress, 3 years later, I was able to give the testimony to send my father to prison for the rest of his life. My grandmother was a Jehovah's Witness, so she taught me that religion, and that religion gave me hope because it said that if I live a Christ-like life, I could see my mom again in the resurrection. So all I cared about was doing the right thing so I can see her again, because my mother has been with me throughout my entire life. Even the day after she died, she came to me in a dream with explicit instructions of to look after my brother and sister, and to know that she would never leave me, and to live one life for the both of us. Say, like, a lot of my childhood, I didn't understand the pain that I was in, because I was raised in a family where you just gotta keep going on. You gotta keep going on. It was no room for vulnerability in my house. Like, if somebody asks you if you're doing okay, you say, yes, I'm doing okay, you know? So a lot of pain was just like tucked in. You just keep on going. And, but I started to see that my life was different, because from the first grade, I went to school in Jewish neighborhoods. So I went to school with people, and I would go to their houses for lunch, and I saw that their family wasn't like my family, you know? And when you see these differences, you realize something isn't right. So this is how I basically went my life, just always wanting to experience and explore different family, different life, a different way to love, you know? And then I smoked weed for the first time at 18. And the funny thing about that, my mom was 25 when my dad killed her. And when I smoked weed for the first time, it brought back a nostalgic feeling of my childhood. And what I didn't know was every time my mom would light incense, she was smoking weed. So when I smoked this weed for the first time, I felt those incense. I felt this connection with my mom, which then let me know maybe this isn't that bad. So I had an entrepreneurial spirit, and before you know it, I start selling weed to all my friends in school. And a year later, I was making about $40,000 a week selling weed, just weed in college.
It's good entrepreneurial skills.
Yeah,
there, actually.
Yeah, yeah. I thought I did a pretty good job. And I didn't think the government would be too mad, but they indicted me. I never was arrested before, never in trouble with the law before, good kid. But I had this huge operation through all the Eastern State Colleges in Pennsylvania, and they gave me the maximum of the sentencing guidelines. They gave me 4 years in prison. And this shocked me. I was devastated. I was scared to death. And out of the first 6 months, I spent three in solitary confinement, because every prison that they put me in, somebody who snitched on me, somebody who informed on me would be in this prison, so they got to protect that person. Put me in a hole until they could transfer me to another prison.
Did you go? Were you in college?
Yeah, I was in college.
So you went straight from being a college student and entrepreneurial venture, whatever
yes.
it was,
yes.
to this. Wow.
I dropped out, though, when I realized that I was making more in a week than I would make in a year after my degree.
Yeah, of course.
Basically went straight from school to doing this. And so they gave me 4 years in prison. Out of the first 6 months, I spent 3 in solitary confinement. And the last time they put me in solitary confinement, the guards beat me. And they beat me bad. And I was scared and I was crying. And my mom came to me again. And she told me that she never left me. She told me to be strong for Danielle and Danny. And she told me to forgive. And then I never heard her again. And immediately I forgave everybody who did me wrong in my life. Wow. You know, everybody who snitched on me, everybody who put me in this situation. I forgave. 35 days later, I get out of solitary confinement. I'm walking to the infirmary because I'm really, really sick. And as I'm walking in the infirmary, it's a guy coming out, and I recognize this dude immediately, but he has no idea who I am. So when we come face to face, he's looking at me like, "What you looking at?" And I'm like, "It's me, your son." And then my father drops to his knees. He starts crying. All my life, I hated this man. All my life, I was scared of this man. And now he's at my feet crying, praising the Lord, and begging me to speak to him. I knew at this moment I couldn't ignore the divine intervention in this. Even though I couldn't deal with it.
Yeah, communicated with your mom spiritually, and then you see this man. And also, how did you recognize him? Was it just like you recognize him through your own face, or because you'd known him as a child?
Exactly. Right. He was 29 the last time I saw him when I testified against him at 13. From 29 to 39, he didn't change much. Mm-hmm. You know, that's still my dad. Mm-hmm. I changed a lot from 13 to 22. You know, like I got facial hair. I'm a man now.
Completely different than a 13-year-old.
Exactly. So I'm sure he probably felt something, but he couldn't put his finger on it. And then when I said, "I'm your son," it was just like, it was everything, because it was all the pain, all the fear, all the anger, all the abandonment, everything that I had been holding in for all my life since my mom left, it was right there. And I had no choice but to face it. Luckily, not right there at that moment. The guard separated us, and I had days to process everything. But that's what the story is all about. That's basically how my story started. From there, it gets even crazier.
Yeah. So you found spirituality, like, mostly through your mom talking to you?
Yes, I found spirituality through the religion, but the higher level of spirituality was from my mother communicating with me.
Wow.
And it was a long time before I could accept this. Because our ancestors, our guardian angels, they communicate with us all the time. Like, but we ignore it as coincidences.
You kind of have to be open to it, open to receive.
When you keep seeing that number on the clock over and over again, or when you're thinking about a word and you open up a book and you see that word right in the book, mm-hmm. or when you hear this song, that's it. Like, this is your guardian angels. This is no such thing as a random coincidence. And that's what I had to stop running from. So that's where I was able to fully embrace my mother's presence in my life.
Wow. And your book, Seven Wonders of Me, it's about self-reflections. But there's 7 chapters, and each chapter is a different
7
chakra.
Parts.
Oh, 7 parts. Like, the first part is the root chakra. How did you become in touch with the chakras, and what led you to relate this book to chakras?
The thing, my ultimate goal in telling my story was to help other people. Like, basically, it was a journey, you know, to one, face the pain, sit with the pain. And I wanted to, I didn't want people to lose the opportunity, you know, of healing while reading my story. The story is very entertaining, that you could just be like, "Wow, this kid, this," but you will miss it unless I help you put yourself in the story.
Yeah,
that's why I made the book cover a mirror. So the first thing you do when you see the book is you see a reflection of yourself. And then written on that mirror is my mother's handwriting, and it says the words, "I love me."
That's really beautiful.
So you're looking at yourself, and you're looking at that word, "I love me," and it was really important that I took my mom's handwriting and put that on there. But the reason why I use the chakras, which are so commonly known but rarely understood.
And also, you talk about them in spirituality or yoga, but it's also scientifically proven. We do have these different energy centers on our body. Yeah. Throughout the world, yep. There's different chakras, energy centers.
Absolutely. But the thing is, we don't, like, it's such an accessible form of our magic. It's such an accessible form of connecting with the same energy that creates life itself. And we got these, like you said, energy points all over our body. So the reason why I started off each part with a chakra is, one, I want to explain to the reader what that feels like at this moment. Like, I put the reader in that moment.
Wow, like, you did an excellent job with that, though. Like, the root chakra, he's talking about running through the forest and feeling grounded and a sense of groundedness. The story, it's very entertaining because, like, you're going through these crazy things, and he gets very in-depth with even, like, being on trial for your father, which is, like, really intense to read. Like, it's a page-turner. And then you go to the beginning where it gets into the chakras, and you feel it inside of your body, too.
It was so important for me because I didn't want it to be something that you're reading. I wanted to put you inside of it.
I felt it inside it.
So that's why the first part of the book is the root chakra. The root chakra is your base. It's your grounding. You know, it's your safety net. So if you don't feel grounded, if you feel like your security is, you know, like, at risk, or, you know, anything like this, it's your root chakra is not balanced. And I want people to see that, understand that, before we start getting into my journey of how shaky the beginning of my story was.
Yeah, because I'm sure, like, you're living your life with your mom, and then you get uprooted, start living with your grandma because she passed away. So you feel that. And, like, how old were you when your mom passed?
10.
10. And then you were in court for your dad when you were 13. So that's 3 years of, like, ungroundedness. Like, your root chakra was probably in havoc. And
although I'm surrounded by love, my grandparents love me, my aunts and uncles love me, but we're constantly reminded that we're not like them. You know, like, we look like my father. So, you know, they're loving us, but they're still dealing with their own pain and seeing three little kids that look like the man who killed their daughter, sister. So it's like, it was only until I wrote the book that I was really able to understand this.
Wow.
And that's why writing the book was so important for me. It was so therapeutic, you know, because I had to sit with that pain. I had to revisit those moments and really understand them so I can illustrate it to the reader. So then hopefully they'll see that. Like, my neighbor read the book, and she was like, you know, when you were talking about how your family always talked about your ears and how they look like your father's and things of that nature. And it was the same thing for me growing up. And, like, that's what I want. That's a win for me if you see your pain in my story, you know, because then you'll see how to heal from it.
Yeah, and you had to put yourself in your grandma's position where her daughter passed away and she's taking care of the kids. And also, like, you were feeling your pain.
Exactly. Too. Everybody has their own pain.
Everyone has their own story.
Pain, yeah. But pain is pain at the end of the day. And that's another thing that I wanted readers to get, because my pain is completely different than my brother's pain. Like, I'm 10 years old. My brother's 3. My brother lost everything. He lost every memory of his mother. Like, he hears stories about my mom that he doesn't know. So his hate for my father is at a different level. His pain and abandonment is a different level, but it's pain and abandonment nonetheless. Mm-hmm. And that's what I just want everybody to recognize, see, and break through.
Luckily, you had your family that was loving, and then you're in college, and then you're entrepreneurial, like, making really good money, and then you go to prison, and then you're out, and I understand you were excelling in corporate America with the radio stations, and you were very successful almost immediately outside of that, and then you began traveling the world. So let's talk about some of your accomplishments in your adulthood.
The music, the corporate thing right after prison was actually a part of the drug dealing. Like, I used to make so much money that I did concerts. I never made money from the concerts. It was just to hear my name on the radio.
It was a passion.
It was just fun. It was, I didn't know what to do. You're 19 years old, you're making this kind of money, and it's like, hey, why don't I just throw a concert with Biggie Smalls or Jay-Z or, you know, and that's what I did. And so when I was arrested, everybody found out what I really was, because I used to tell people I got all my money from life insurance. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, my mom left us a bunch of life insurance. She was a 25-year-old black woman. Like, nobody put that together. But they wanted to believe the story, so they believed the story. And so when I got out of prison, they realized, like, yo, this dude's still a good dude, you know, and he can really sell, you know, because he's passionate. That's the one thing about me. I'm passionate about anything I do. So first, straight out of prison, I get a job at a radio station, and they get me to do all the club business. And when people see that passion in your eyes,
contagious.
Yeah. And then from there, I moved on to New York. Started at Power 105 in New York City as the fashion advertising director, and then moved on to the number one selling magazine on news. And this is all less than 2 years out of prison.
Wow, that's insane.
Making six figures, rubbing shoulders with music executives, Kevin Lyles, Leo Combs, all the stars. It was really exciting. But at that point, I realized this isn't my purpose. This isn't what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, I knew it was something deeper. Like, I had a purpose, and I needed to find what that purpose was. And that led me to the City of Angels, where I started. My cousin was married to Kevin Hart, so it was easy for me to get into comedy. So I started doing stand-up comedy, but I realized that wasn't my purpose either. And the purpose was to get this pain out, like really to tell this story, because I had been holding it for so long, you know? And I knew any time I met somebody and I told my story, they were completely fascinated, inspired. So I knew it was a reason for the pain, you know? So that's when I left the States and I moved to Australia to start writing this book.
Yeah, it sounds like you're very resilient, but if you're still holding things in, it's going to come out at some point.
Exactly.
And then whenever you're ready, you can express it in the proper way.
You just know things. It's kind of like I said in the introduction of the book. It comes that point where you realize this isn't the life I want to live. You know, and when you decide that you want to live your purpose, it's not a simple path. You know, it takes you all over the place, and mine took me all over the world.
Yeah. So you told me it took you 14 years to write this book, which is understandable. It's like a work of art, work in progress. So you were in Australia, and I know you went to Bali and met a spiritual healer. Is this all while you were writing your book too?
That's how the book started. I'm living in Melbourne, Australia. It was my mom's 50th birthday.
Wow.
And I wanted to connect with her before I started the book. So I asked my friends in Australia, I said, where can I go spiritual? February 1st is coming up. I want to be somewhere spiritual for my mom's 50th, and that's where I'll start the book. And they were like, dude, Bali's like six hours away. So I went to Bali, and I just read this book called Eat, Pray, Love. I get there, and some guy's like, you want to meet Catoot Lear? And that's the medicine man from Eat, Pray, Love.
Whoa.
And then he draws my... It gets crazier and crazier, but that's what life is when you stop pretending, when you stop ignoring the signs, when you start following the signs, you know, and you have that confidence and that faith to know that, wait, I feel like this is the right thing. And then everything just starts to happen from there. Like, for me to meet this medicine man that I just got finished reading about in the book, and then he tells me my mom is right there with me, even though I couldn't hear her, he's like, I see her. She's with you. And he literally drew her hand on my back, and he goes, go tattoo this on yourself.
Did it look like her hand?
It looks exactly like her hand. And he drew it, like, in 2 seconds, like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
In his little composition book.
Whoa.
And the dude's like 150. He's like,
he's connected.
Yeah, he's connected. So it was a really spiritual moment to start the book there. But the book, it was a healing process for me, because throughout every chapter, throughout every page, I had to sit with that pain. And that's why it took so long, because to really illustrate it to the reader, I had to explain what that pain feels like. I had to go back into those dark places.
Yeah, you have to process it. And sometimes you can like be processing like an emotion that comes up for a while, take a break, connect to your nature, spirituality, fitness, and then come back to it.
Absolutely. And another thing too, you see the pattern hasn't changed much. You see this thing that was so painful to you as a child, it's still painful. It's just a different way. You know, where it was the guy in school, the girl in school before, now it's your boyfriend. You know, it's turned into these toxic relationships that you're into. So until we sit with that pain, until we start to begin to heal with that pain, it just resurfaces in different relationships, in different situations.
Yeah, we have to figure out how to break patterns.
Absolutely.
And you told me something else that I really love is every morning, if you're around somewhere that has a beach, you'll go to the beach and run to the beach and connect with your mom spiritually, get your fitness going, get your blood moving. And if you're not around a beach, then you go somewhere like a park or something.
Yep. I got to be around one of the elements.
Yeah. And then I saw you also were on the Today's Show and like went super viral or something. Can you tell us a little bit more about this?
So every morning I go to the ocean. I ground. I pray to my mom. Just before my last birthday, which was September, I was in London and I was finishing the book. And it was 2 days after I finished the book, and I go to Regent's Park to pray to my mom because there's no beaches in London. And as I'm praying to her, I say, Mom, please bring the people in my life that are meant to bring me towards my purpose and take away the people that aren't. And it was a beautiful prayer, and I'm walking away, and some guy stops me, and he's like, yo, dude, I like your outfit. And, you know, he's nice, you know, he's cool-looking dude. I'm like, yep. That's what's up, thanks. And I just kept it pushing, which for whatever reason surprised him. And he's like, hold up. So then we start chatting. And we walking and chatting. And then next thing you know, some lady calls from behind us and she's like, excuse me, can I take your picture? And since he just complimented my outfit, I'm like, man, I must be killing it today.
Killing it.
Yeah. And I'm like, sure, I'll take a picture with you. And she's like, no, not you, with him. And I'm like, that's weird. I'm sharper than him today. You know,
but like, I'm the cool one.
I'll take the picture. So I start to take a picture of him and her. And then it's like a crowd forming. And I'm thinking, because, you know, when you're taking a picture, people stop. So I'm thinking that I'm holding them up. So I go ahead, guys. You can go. I'm going to take a couple more pictures. And they go, no, we want our picture too. And I'm like, word? You know, so I'm taking pictures of them. And then everybody's about to leave. And I'm like, wait. Who are you? And he's like, I'm a singer. So I'm like, I should get a picture with you too. So we take a picture and then we get to talking more as we're walking down the street. And then I say, yo, by the way, what's your name? And he goes, Harry. And I'm like, cool. But what's your last name? Because I'm going to Google you. And he goes, Styles. And I'm like, all right, gotcha, Harry Styles.
Remember it, Harry Styles.
I remember it. It's a good name, bro. It's a good name. And then I Googled him. And when I Googled him, the first thing I saw was his birthday. His birthday is February 1st. That's my mom's birthday.
Whoa.
So I was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
And then I realized I walked the wrong way. So now I got to repass him again because he's standing at the light. And I'm like, bro, he's like, you got lost? You know, we laugh a bit. And I'm thinking it's nothing, you know, because I don't know he's that big.
Mm-hmm.
So I make this post on Instagram and I make him like the third slide. I make, you know, the outfit that he complimented was the most important thing. So I made that the first slide. And next thing you know, 3 hours later, Good Morning America's calling me. I'm literally on it. Today's Show didn't even call me. They just made a whole story, MTV, USA Today, and it just went crazy viral. But it was beautiful, and it was my mom at work again, because one, it happens right before I drop my book, and then two, it gives me all his fan base to deliver this self-love message to them every day. So since he liked my outfit, I started this thing called Fit of the Day, where I show them what I'm wearing for the day, and then I give them an emotional fit, a mental fit. A self-love fit that's going to carry him through the day.
He just launched his book 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
This was in September. We're in November right now. So like, to get your book out to the audiences, you need some following, you need some traction. So to go viral and then right when your book is being finished, It's pretty powerful. It's pretty helpful for what you for your message.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm wondering, what was the hardest chapter for you to write in this book? I've been reading his book, and for me, the chapter about him going to court for his father and finding out about his mother and talking to his therapist, like, I know therapy can be so helpful. So, like, he's talking about how his therapist brought up ways to communicate, like, what he had known prior to his father hurting his mother, and then he had to go to court as a 13-year-old to put his dad in prison for life. And he's writing about this in detail. So that was heavy.
That definitely was a hard chapter to write because it was a very, very scary moment to be sitting in front of my father, divulging secrets that I had held for years. But the hardest chapter for me to write was the funeral chapter. Because one, even though the whole family knew that my father killed my mother, he wasn't in jail yet. He came to the funeral.
What?
And so to relive that pain of watching him walk to my mother's coffin and kiss her.
What?
It was. And then after that, the whole funeral chapter was so painful because it was the realization that I really had to say goodbye. Like, before they put her in the ground, it was still hope that she would walk through the door and be like, ah, it was a joke. It was a terrible joke, but I'm here. And as a child, you keep hope alive. Mm-hmm. But the day of the funeral, that was the most painful day. You know, it was even more painful of learning that she was gone because it meant that learning she was gone was really real. You know, that now we're putting her under the earth.
Wow. Did your father communicate with you at the funeral at all? Or
he didn't communicate with anybody. He knew he wasn't supposed to be there. But he had to keep up appearances that he didn't do it. So your wife is murdered. You got to go to the funeral. So when he showed up, it was an uproar in the whole place. And I didn't see much because I just stuffed my head in my grandmother's lap at that point. I was trembling, like this was my first major anxiety breakdown, you know. And to just, like I said, to be able to describe that in the book, it was extremely hard. That probably took me months. I would get through a couple sentences and then put it down for 2 months.
Of course, you know? Yeah.
That's why it took so long, because there's so many parts of the book that it's like, I can't deal with that right now.
Yeah, anyone that holds trauma, I'm sure, like, really understands that. Because sometimes you can, like, get through it. Like, yeah, I can talk about this. I can write about this. And then it hits you, all the memories, the emotions. And then maybe you'll have a week of recapping this, even in your dreams or your subconscious or...
Yeah, it was... Working. When people ask me, like, how do you start to love yourself? Or how do you start to escape the emotional trauma? And the first part is to sit with it. To sit with that pain, to feel it, and then ask yourself, why is this painful? You know, like, really start to understand it. So I went all around the world to write this book, and I met at least 1,000 people that said to me, I've been thinking about writing a book, and I implore every last one of them, do it, do it. Journaling is a great way to start this thing, but that journaling is just dealing with what you're dealing with today, the pain you're dealing with. To actually write a book, to actually write your story, then that means you gotta sit with it, you gotta understand it, you gotta walk through it.
Express it clearly.
Oh, man, it's the best. You'll say things that you'll never say to your therapist.
It's probably a channel too. You probably end up channeling the more you write.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're channeling the inner child, you're channeling the future self, you're channeling
your
so
teenage
many things.
Self, you're like all of your different versions of yourself have to come through.
Absolutely.
Your story.
Absolutely. It was the best thing that I can ever do. And I'm just so proud that I'm able to share it with everybody. And so many people are going to be able to benefit from it. You know, it's not just a cool story, which it is a cool story. But it's a tool. It's a tool.
So we both live in Miami right now. We met here in Miami.
Miami Beach.
In Miami Beach. It's we both live in Miami Beach. Yeah. We're beach people. Yeah. So what brought you to Miami? How long have you been in Miami?
I think I got here in the end of 2011.
Oh, okay. So you've been here for a long time.
Yeah, and I got here at just this time where the weather was just absolutely perfect. And I was like, I'm never going anywhere else.
Exactly. And what were you doing in Miami when you first got here?
I had just come back from Istanbul. I discovered this fitness business. I took it to New York. It blew up. So I came to Miami just to relax. And then I just absolutely fell in love with the place because that's when I was introduced to Soho Beach House. And now my business became part of Soho Beach House because I was the exclusive trainer for Soho Beach House, which opened the whole world for me. My form of training is you should feel better and look better every single day.
Yeah, you know? When you look good, you feel good too. Absolutely. Like, it sounds superficial, but it's not. Like, beauty is important. How you look is important. When you're working out, you're going to feel better, but you're going to look better.
You got to look better. And there's so many people that will train with trainers, and I've been training with him for 2 years. You still look the same way you looked 2 years ago.
Mm-mm.
Like, for me, the Virgo comes out where I just get to, like, sculpting, you know, every right. single day. I never knew what I would do with my clients until I saw them. And I would look at them and I would go, oh, okay, we got to do this, and the other. By this, that they would go back to their home country and then be like, yo, can you come for 3 months?
Whoa.
So then that's what got me to train in royalty in Qatar and celebrities. But it gave me a whole worldwide perspective. Every experience in life just took me to the next level of understanding. And with the world travel, then I started to be able to see other healers and to enhance my spirituality.
And fitness and spirituality are really connected, like mind, body, soul. It's
but
all.
But I never knew. At first, yeah. When I first got here, it was party time.
Yeah, of course.
It was party
like,
time.
I'll make you look hot. Like, yeah, we're going to party.
Yeah, let's go get some drinks later.
Exactly.
You know, I was typical Miami Beach. And then I got to a point where I was like, I don't want this life anymore. Like, again, this isn't my purpose. My purpose isn't to make people look good and then get, you know, smashed at the end of the night and just, you know, become more popular. It's got to be more meaning. So then that's when I left Miami. So that's in the summertime. We typically leave Miami.
Yeah, it's super seasonal here. The winter is the best. In summer, it's so humid and hot.
If you can afford to get out of Miami in the summertime, get out of Miami.
I think that's why Miami is good, too, because we can have a home base. And then when it's hot in the summer, like, you just want to get out and travel and, like, go see the world.
So that's what I do. I would just go to London. I would go. London was always my home base. So then I went to Africa for 4 months. And I really got into my power.
Whoa, what part of Africa?
Senegal, West Africa.
Wow.
And that's another reason why I bought the chakras. I want people to understand that we have superpowers. How to access these, we can reach our full potential.
Yeah. What connected you with Africa and the crystals and spirituality? How did that all come together?
I always give my mom credit for everything. I had never been to Africa before in my life. I never wanted to go to Africa. It was my 44th birthday. And I was like, yeah, I want to go somewhere spiritual. And some guy told me Senegal is the most beautiful place on earth.
Wow, I don't know much about it.
I didn't either. Yeah. I knew nothing about it. And I took his word and I got there. And it wasn't easy at first because I don't speak French. But then I met some French guy. I started doing retreats. It was over this beautiful lagoon, spiritual, beautiful lagoon. And then I started meeting with different spiritual healers, the chiefs of the villages. I mean, things that scared me all my life. That's what the whole journey has been about, facing those fears and learning so much magic from them. You know?
Were the healers in Africa connected to crystals, or what kind of magic were they working with?
Crystals. I've went on some journeys. That have taken me outside of this vessel mm-hmm. that you guys see now, and it's taken me to a different spiritual realm.
So your book touches a lot on self-love, and the concept of self-love is very popular now, but some people may think it's like woo-woo or abstract. Like, how does self-love play into your story? How has self-love helped you grow or help other people grow?
The first time that, it was two situations that got me to understanding what self-love was. One was I was in a very toxic relationship, and I was actually seeing a therapist. And the therapist looked at me, and I was dressed really nice that day. And just to mention.
Yeah, those are important parts.
Yeah. And he looks at me, and he goes, looking at you, I would never know that you had such low self-esteem.
Ooh.
And I was offended, immediately offended. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he said, well, you gotta think low of yourself to think that this woman who's hurting you, who's never available for you, who's putting you through so much pain, is the best thing out there for you.
Wow.
And that was just like a crazy realization. And then I went to, I was in LA, and my cousin invited me to a dinner party. And to get to this dinner party, you had to write a love letter to yourself and send it to the host.
Oh.
I thought this gonna be a breeze,
yeah.
Right? So I start writing, and the Virgo kicks in because I'm reading these letters that I'm writing, and it's like, this is like, sounds like a Hallmark card. This is crazy. It's not love. So then I threw those all away, and it became an apology letter. And I said, I love you. And it wasn't until I wrote those three words that I really understood, because instead of telling you I love you when I wake up in the morning, I tell you how fat your face is. I remind you of that text message you ain't get a reply from, that email that you ain't get. I remind you of all the failures. Like, I have been emotionally and verbally abusing you since I've known you. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, because I love you. And that's when it really started to click with me. So my understanding of self-love is giving yourself all that love, attention, affection, compassion that you give to easily to these other people. You know, it's about creating the boundaries, being able to say no. I've been a yes person all my life. You know, hey, you want to go over here? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And being able to say no and feel okay with that. You know, like getting your nails done, taking a beautiful bath, going to the spa, that's all the cute part of self-love. But the real part of self-love is sitting with yourself and appreciating yourself and knowing your worth and not letting anything compromise that. Words are the only thing that don't heal. You know, like you could cut yourself and, you know, it'll heal. But that word, that sticks with you for your life. So that's why it's very important for us to forgive ourselves for the things that we say to other people, but most importantly, forgive ourselves for the things that we say to ourselves.
It's true. And spelling casts spells. Like, words cast spells. That's why they call it spelling. Like, I think it's so important for people to tell themselves, like, I am resilient. Or if people are like, oh, I'm so sorry for what you went through, be like, well, thank you. I'm really resilient. Like, tell it to yourself. Tell it to other people. Just throw it out there. Whatever you throw out to the universe comes back.
We so don't understand the power of an affirmation. It's so easy to say good things about ourselves, and we don't believe that the bad things that we say about ourselves are also affirmations. So just constantly watching your words, constantly putting yourself first, is so important. Like I say in the book, like what they say on airplanes, put your face mask on before you put your child's face mask on. And the first time I heard that, I was like, that is some effed up stuff. Self, like so many people, you know, are tempted to get into self-love, they're tempted to make themselves first, but then they think it's selfish. You can't truly love and give all the love that you want to somebody else that you love with, it's your children, your mate, whatever, until you have it for yourself first.
It's true. And I think that's why fitness is so important. Reading is so important. Like,
yep. And any way you can express that self-love, that's what fashion is for me. You know, like I never was a good artist or musician or anything. So fashion became my expression of art.
You talked about this, like the connection between being superficial and the supernatural. Like, it's not all that superficial. Like, it is also supernatural.
It's so important to recognize the superficial, but then make it supernatural.
We got to balance it. That's my Libra. Yeah. All about the balance. Yeah.
It ain't cool to be, you know what I mean, so enlightened, but your fit ain't right.
It's true. I know. We're not doing that on the Hot Girl Hotline.
Exactly.
So you mentioned you're a Virgo. Do you know what your moon and rising signs are?
Unfortunately not, because that's on my original birth certificate.
Oh.
And, once my grandparents adopted us, we have a new birth certificate. Oh. What's yours?
I'm Libra Sun, Libra Rising, and Cancer Moon. Your Virgo comes out very well in your writing. Like,
thank
it's very
you so much.
Well written and very entertaining and informative and helpful too.
It was one of the first things that I've ever done in my life. I'm 49 now, and that I can say I'm proud of myself.
You should be really proud of this.
I like really finished the book, and I was like, I'm so proud of this.
Yeah, you really should be. It's entertaining, informative. Like, you feel it. I love it. You did a great job.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, and I hope everybody else appreciate it.
I think they will. So check out The Seven Wonders of Me.
It's available on Amazon.
It's on Amazon, and the audiobook is coming out soon.
Audiobook.
Reading me the first chapter of it, and I was like, is this on Audible? Because I want to listen to you read this whole thing. It's amazing.
I do.
And where can people find you? Plug your social medias, if you have a website.
On Instagram, I'm the nail man, but it's the_nail_man. And on TikTok, I'm just at the nail man. Yeah.
So thanks, guys, for watching. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you, Darnell.
Thank you so much for having me, Madison. Thank you, guys. Hot girl.